on radio, on YouTube, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers. This is Invest Talk. Independent thinking, shared success. InvestTalk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. Here is KPP Financial Portfolio Manager, Luke Guerrero.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome back to InvestTalk. I'm Luke Guerrero, and today's Thursday, October 2nd, 2025. Now, the third quarter is in the books. We have started the fourth quarter. We are well on our way to the end of the year. And remember, when we said it felt like time was moving fast, well, now you feel it, don't you? With regards to the stock market in your portfolio, because of this, now is not the time to lose focus. A lot of people start the year off right. Their New Year's resolutions, they taper off. There is no time like the present. Start to get things under control now. Now, in order to help you, we here at InvestTalk bring you educational material, actionable material, but most importantly, we answer your finance and investment questions. But we can't do that without a little help from you, from growing our audience to get more finance and investment questions, or picking up the phone, dialing in live, or leaving questions over on our YouTube. Now, in just a bit, we'll talk about today's market performance and run down those show topics. But first, let's tackle this caller question.
Hi, Justin and Luke. I'm interested in purchasing Martin Marietta, symbol MLM. I live in central New York, and there's road construction everywhere, and cement and stone and blacktop. And I just was thinking this would be a good investment for that kind of a play. I'd like to get your opinion. Thank you.
Ticker MLM is Martin Marietta Materials, Inc. It is one of the leading suppliers of heavy building materials within the United States. Now, it produces and sells aggregates, so that's crushed stone, sand, gravel, a whole bunch of stuff put together, cement, ready-mix concrete, and asphalt paving materials. Its end markets include infrastructure, commercial construction, residential construction, and public works. Now, the company is well known for having a bit of geographic diversification. It operates across many states in the U.S., including New York. And so this emphasizes a bit of high quality diversification for their businesses. Now, because these materials tend to be heavy and transportation costs are high, it shored up its supply chain earlier by regionally basing its centers close to where demand is. And so that gives it a bit of a competitive advantage. Now, recently, stock is up 21.56% year to date, up 12.39% in the past 3 months, up 20.50% over the past 52 weeks. Its relative strength looks pretty solid going all the way back to 2019. Its sales have grown at about 6.6% on an annualized basis, albeit that's slowing down quite a bit from December of 2024. Into December 2025. Might actually be around 6%. Its net income has grown at 26.7%, though that is set to fall this year, meaning margins are set to contract from 30.5%, which I guess was a bit out of the ordinary looking back at this five-year track record. Really over double what you have on average over the past 5 years before that. And so in a way, it's coming back down to earth, down to about 16.5% net margin, EBITDA margin, settling back down at 32, roughly in line with where it's been over the past couple of years. Now, in terms of size, the $37 billion market cap company looks like it's got about $6 billion in debt, just under $6 billion in debt. So its balance sheet is pretty decent from that perspective. A little bit of cash, 670. So roughly $5 billion in net debt. So what do you really got to be concerned about? What's going on here? Well, government spending on infrastructure, roads, state infrastructure budgets, all of that has created big demand, big support demand for MLM's products. And again, because of their ability to use their competitive advantage, where they've placed their heavy materials, that has led to great growth for them. But you have to understand, right, the construction sector fluctuates. Strength or weakness in commercial or residential construction directly influences the demand for these materials. There's a bit of cost pressures and input inflation going on. They have to manage energy costs, fuel costs, equipment costs, labor costs, maintenance costs. There's, again, this logistics. Yes, you're placing these things in good areas, but at the same time, it's expensive and costly and time-consuming to move them all over the place. And so, you know, I think this comes down to, what do you think about infrastructure policy and public spending? It seemed that we may be in an era where government spending is paring back a little bit, especially infrastructure projects. We're seeing that already in the shutdown. It's been for about 2 days now, and the government's cutting contracts in some states. Again, input cost inflation, transportation costs, all of these things lead me to believe that, yes, this company's doing well, construction is doing well, but it's trading at 29.2 times forward-looking earnings. It's about the high of its past 5 years. I like this company. Solid, solid company. Great logistically. Great strategy. Excellent balance sheet, but a little bit too expensive at the moment, especially given where we are cyclically in the construction business. That is ticker MLM. I would keep watching, but not right now. We've got a lot of ground to cover in the next 45 minutes or so, and here's a little bit of what we have planned for you. My main focus point concerns this question: gold rush or gold trap? The truth about precious metals IRAs. Now, we will explore the risks and rewards of a precious metal IRA, detailing how these accounts offer diversification and hedge against inflation, but they do come with some gotchas. Also, we'll touch on the rise of landlords, right? A bunch of companies buying up a bunch of homes now have, frankly, new competition from residential retail owners who want to sell their homes, want to get out of their homes, but now's not really a good time for them to do that given where demand and costs are for buyers. So more competition in the landlord space. Also touch on a story that we highlighted a couple weeks ago, I want to say, about crypto treasury companies. And now it's starting to bear out some fruit. And should we have time at the end of the show, just a brief update on where we stand with tariffs, who's being charged what rate, what sectors are most effective. It's been about 5-6 months now, so where do we stand? We also have some voice bank calls ready to play, including one on Pulsar Helium Inc., which is ticker PSRHF. Another on Alibaba Group Holdings Limited, ticker BABA, and some questions that came in from the comments section of the InvestTalk YouTube channel, and hopefully some live calls from you throughout the show. We're going to do a quick break. Please remember, you can call anytime and leave your questions on the InvestTalk voice bank. If you're listening via our live stream or possibly on AM 1220 in the Bay Area, call now at 888-99-CHART. Up next, but not today's market activity.
Serious investors are certain to have finance and investment questions.
What do you think's a good price?
And the best person to ask your question in the right way is you.
And I was wondering, from your standpoint, is there a downside in buying fractional shares versus whole shares?
And 24/7, rain or shine, Justin Klein and Luke Guerrero stand ready to provide their unbiased answers.
OKE is the simple, we like the business. I will say we've trimmed it a bit and cut it as a lower weighting.
Now, while gold is hitting these record highs, it's driven by the safe haven demand, by central bank buying across the board.
Your participation makes InvestTalk better.
Hey, Justin and Luke, this is Josh in North Carolina.
This is Marlo from New York City area.
Let's go take a live call, Sam from San Jose.
So don't forget to call InvestTalk.
Great insights. Thank you.
888-99-CHART. Guerrero is here, and he's ready with answers to your finance and investment questions. Call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Let's talk a little bit about the market today. U.S. stocks finished higher overall in Thursday trading, improving a bit off of the mid-morning lows that we saw. And because of this, the Dow up 17 basis points, S&P 500 up 6, NASDAQ up 39, Russell 2000 up 66. Led the Dow and S&P and NASDAQ to log new, fresh record closes. Our performers included semis, managed care companies, airlines, chemicals, restaurants, machines, multis, building products, and credit cards. Big tech, pretty mixed, though Tesla was a notable decliner despite better-than-expected Q3 delivery reports. Underperformers broadly included pharma, biotech, energy, money center banks, exchanges, communication networks names, and grocers. The bond side, treasuries were unchanged. Firmer at the longer end, 30-year yield was up 2 basis points. Dollar index was up 20 basis points. Gold finished down 80, slightly paring its recent strength. And crude oil settling down 2.1% for its lowest close since May 8th. Overall, fairly quiet session. Not really much to shift the broad market narrative. Ongoing government shutdown, certainly a big headline that was in focus, though. The market has really, thus far, largely viewed it as more noise than news. The dynamic could change a bit if the shutdown lengthens or the White House moves ahead with the threatened mass firings. But really, that's all that the market is seeing there. AI-driven global semi-tech rally, another area of focus, and a bit of pickup in the Fed easing expectations, also in the front burner. Still largely viewed as a tailwind for risk sentiment, amid the expectations that the labor market slowdown will only be temporary. Also, some increased attention on the fact that, well, we may have to start looking at some alternate data sources in the absence of official releases tomorrow. Senate will vote again tomorrow on a 7-week stopgap continuing resolution. But if that fails, no more votes likely until at least Monday of next week. Note, due to the shutdown, there will be no release today of initial claims and factory orders, there was no release today. What we did get is the Challenger layoffs number down 37% month over month and 26% year over year in September, though still on track to top 1 million for the first time since 2020, and hiring plans are down nearly 60% year over year. The latest Chicago Fed labor market projection estimates for September had the unemployment rate held steady near 4.3%. September ISM manufacturing, or rather ISM services, the highlight for Friday with the BLS employment data delayed due to the government shutdown. Wall Street looking for the ISM services to slip to 51.7 in September from 52 in August. Now, from time to time, we do receive questions over on our YouTube channel. You can submit them on any of the comment sections, and we'll try and tackle those as quickly as we can. This question is on ticker ACI. Let's pull this up. ACI is the name. ACI Worldwide is the name of the company. It engages in the development, marketing, installation, and support of software products and solutions. Focuses primarily on facilitating real-time electronics payments. Now, over the past 52 weeks, the company is up 5.9%, 5.79%. For the past 3 months, it's up 16.55%, and year-to-date up 2.14%. Revenue growth about 5% on an annualized basis, not too shabby, while net income has grown at 24.8%. In fact, it's projected to grow about 20% from last year, about $203 million in revenue in 2024, projected to be about $243 million this upcoming year. Let's take a look at its debt. It's got about $912 million in debt on a $5.6 billion market cap company, so not too much to worry about from a leverage perspective, and has about $216 million in cash on hand. Its margins improving pretty steadily. EBITDA margin up from 27.2 to 28.8 is projected to where it's supposed to go this upcoming year, and net margin to grow from 12.7 to 14%. Now, for a relative valuation basis, it's sitting below its average. It ranged from 13.4 to 48 over the past 5 years, sitting at 21.2. Its average is 24.3. And it's pretty well diversified across its business segments. Billers making up 46% of its business, banks 44%, and merchants about 10%. And only 58% of its revenue comes directly from the United States. Now, they have recently expanded their technology partnership ecosystem in June of this year. So they brought in that partner network. They extended it to the UK. There's been a bit of executive leadership changes. And frankly, they're strengthening their real-time payment rate, something that looks pretty solid. You've seen strong quarterly results and, again, great recurring revenue growth. Now, they pushed to unify multiple payment rails, so account-to-account, card, ACH, real-time, into a centralized hub under its singular architecture. So they are improving their products, and that's really appearing in revenue growth, but most importantly, appearing in profit generation here and in margin expansion. Now, it's a very competitive environment with a lot of regulatory pressure, but frankly, given where it is from a valuation perspective, I kind of like the opportunity that is in front of us here. Now, I wouldn't buy it if it continues on a downward trend, but I would certainly look to get in soon. That is ACI, ACI Worldwide, Inc. Headed into a break. Still to come, my main focus point, more answers to your questions. I encourage you to call now at 888-99-CHART.
'24/7, rain or shine, there's always value in the Invest Talk podcast. 888-99-CHART.
Now, my main focus point today concerns this question. Gold rush or golden trap, the truth about precious metal IRAs. A precious metals IRA is a retirement account that it lets you hold physical gold, silver, platinum, or palladium. Now, to qualify, the metals must meet IRS fineness standards, but also be stored with an approved custodian. Similar to your Roth IRA, in 2025, the contribution limits is a mere $7,000 in 2025, $8,000 if you are 50 years or older for that catch-up contribution. Now, structurally, it works like any other IRA. You choose between traditional, so tax-deferred, or Roth, tax-free withdrawals. The key difference, though, instead of holding stocks and bonds, highly liquid, can get rid of in an instant, really, well, nearly an instant, you're holding tangible bullion or coins. You can't stash these metals at home. They have to be held in secure IRS-approved vaults. And the main appeal really is diversification. Precious metals can hedge against market swings. They provide differing correlations between the other things in your portfolio. And in times of inflation and uncertainty, they tend to do particularly well. We have seen a historic run-up in gold over the past 18 to 24 months, and it seems like it is going to keep on moving full steam ahead. Now, like other IRAs, you do get tax advantages depending on whether you go traditional or Roth. Either way, you stand to benefit from a tax perspective. But metals, they come with drawbacks, right? They have to be stored physically. Precious metals, they're heavy, they're big. There's also custodial fees that are higher than your standard IRA. There's a difference between just keeping a log, a ledger of who owns what, and physically having to store these metals. As I mentioned before, liquidity is also a bit limited. Selling bars or coins, it's not really as quick as unloading shares of stock. If you need to get rid of them quickly, the spread tends to be a lot wider, meaning that you could potentially take a big hit, a haircut based upon the current market value price compared to what you're going to get if you demand immediacy. Precious metals also don't generate dividends or interest. So growth depends solely on price appreciation and in a lot of ways can depend heavily on speculation. The bottom line is they can be a pretty smart complement to a broader portfolio, but rarely a one-stop retirement solution. Just like anything else, you should never throw all of your eggs into one basket. Let's keep things moving and play another caller question now.
Hi, Luke and Justin. This is James from New York. I have a question about Alibaba, BABA. I've been holding BABA for many years now, and I've rode it up and down. I'm wondering, is it still a good hold? I finally broke even on the stock, and I'm wondering, is it just too risky to own Chinese stocks? Or does this have room to run and I should just keep holding for the long term? Thank you. Have a good day.
Alibaba is a technology infrastructure marketing behemoth commerce company out of China. Recently, the company restructured to give it a bit of a change in terms of how it has its business units. They took its six core business units and gave them a little bit more autonomy. So their cloud, their retail, their logistics, not really answering to the same singular group of leaders. Alibaba International's revenue, 9.9% of the business, 10.8% from cloud intelligence, part of the retail space, about 38.8%, and the rest a mixture of non-Chinese retail. Now, they've been pretty aggressively pivoting towards AI and cloud infrastructure. In 2025, they announced plans to invest 380 billion yuan, so that's about $52 billion, over 3 years in AI and cloud systems. They also increased their AI and CapEx and pretty heavily repositioned their business or their cloud businesses focus. They also have a pretty big history, though, of regulatory challenges, right? You had a big crackdown in China in 2020 to 2021. But in recent times, Chinese tech firms are gaining a bit of nude investor interest, understandably so, right? This huge, massive multinational technology conglomerate. Its business spans e-commerce, cloud computing, media, entertainment, and logistics, AI. It is a massive company, $443 billion market cap, only got about $30 billion in debt. At the same time, it's sitting on about $64 billion in cash. So its net debt is negative, right? It has more cash than it does debt on its balance sheet.
You know your business inside and out. Gusto knows payroll, compliance, and benefits as well, so you don't have to. Sounds like a match made in heaven, right? Gusto is online payroll and benefits software built for small businesses. It's all in one, remote friendly, and incredibly easy to use. So you can pay, hire, onboard, and support your team from anywhere. Gusto helps you save time with automated tools built right in, offer letters, onboarding materials, direct deposit, and more. Automatic payroll tax filing, simple direct deposits, health benefits, commuter benefits, workers' comp, 401k, you name it. Gusto makes it simple and has options for nearly every budget. Get direct access to certified HR experts to help support you through any tough HR situation. It's quick and simple to switch to Gusto. Just transfer your existing data to get up and running fast. Plus, don't pay a cent until you run your first payroll. Try Gusto today at gusto.com/investtalk and get 3 months free when you run your first payroll. That's 3 months of free payroll at gusto.com/investtalk. One more time, gusto.com/investtalk.
Been repurchasing shares pretty heavily. Repurchased 17 million shares, totaling $241 million in Q3 alone. But at the same time, right, it still sees the same regulatory geopolitical risk that it saw in 2020 and in 2021. So it has been doing better. The focus has been better for it. It's up 123% year to date, but it's sitting at 20.6 times forward looking earnings. I mean, that's well above its 5-year average. Granted, had a rough 5 years, but still sitting in a position where, well, valuation might become a bit of a concern here. I agree with you. The risk seems to be a bit high here, just given a lot of uncertainty around its political and regulatory environment in China. That is Alibaba Group Holdings Limited, ticker BABA. On the next Invest Talk, we will look into this topic, top 18 U.S. cities that don't tax your 401k or pension. In this episode, we'll explore 18 U.S. cities and states that impose no taxes on 401k or pension withdrawals, and how choosing one can stretch your retirement dollars further. That's tomorrow. For now, I'm Luke Guerrero, ready to take your calls at 888-99-CHART.
Investors, the goal of achieving financial freedom requires unbiased information, strategic planning, and determination. Congratulations! You found the podcast that is dedicated to helping you succeed. InvestTalk.
Hey, InvestTalk. I just have a question about a stock with the ticker PSRHF, Pulsar Helium, Inc. I'm just curious on your opinion of them. I've been investing in them for like a year and not much has happened until recently. And I was just curious if helium has any future potential. I know it's used in kind of a large range of things. Cool, I guess, like HVAC would use it quite a bit. And yeah, just curious about your opinion on it. Thanks.
Now, taking a look at PSRHF, it is Pulsar Helium Inc. It's a development and exploration company, and they focus on helium projects in the United States, but also internationally. Now, its flagship asset is out in Minnesota, the Topaz Project, which they state is among the highest grade helium projects globally. They also hold exploration interest in Greenland, among other countries, and the company is currently pre-production, right? Meaning there is zero revenue for this business. There's not projected to be revenue anytime soon for this business. Now, they have had a bit of exploration success. They reported pretty high sustained helium concentrations in their jet stream wells and positive reservoir indicators in the zones adjacent to them. They also have been announcing a bit of acquisitions west of their Topaz project in Minnesota, so they are expanding. And the company has begun a bit of engineering studies, right, aimed towards helium production infrastructure. Now, the thing about this is it's pretty speculative. Some forecasts suggest that in the next couple years, they could get going in terms of revenue here. But these are developmental plays, right? There could be delays, cost overruns in permitting, engineering, construction. It could all push out timelines or reduce economics. Helium's also pretty niche. It's strategically important for electronics, space, medical imaging. And supply constraints or demand shifts, therefore, can swing pricing pretty strong. You're also missing out on the bigger risk here, which is, okay, you're expanding, you have no revenue. What is the likelihood that you as a shareholder can get diluted in further capital raises, as well as obviously regulatory risk, permitting risk, all sorts of structural issues? Now, year to date, they're down about 5.69% over the past 52 weeks, up 13.41 over the past 3 months, up 27.03 in 2024. So about 126%. Then again, it did IPO in October of last year. So this falls under two categories. One, I would have recommended not investing it in the first place because it's a development exploration company that has no revenue. I also would have said, if you'd asked me 6 months ago, that this is a company that is in its first year of trading. And we historically know empirically that after your IPO for about a year, in aggregate, stocks tend to underperform. So I'm going to answer this in a similar way that I would any other exploration company that has no revenue, especially in a volatile space. I think there are better opportunities elsewhere. That is PSRHF. A lot of volatility, a lot of risk. Not for me. Thanks for the call. Landlords. Some of us have them. Some of us are them. But big corporate landlords are now facing fresh competition. Regular homeowners who cannot sell, but they need to come up with some cash somehow, so they are renting these properties instead. Rents in top U.S. single-family markets are only projected to rise 0.8% this year, the weakest pace since 2011. Now, investors had expected solid gains given strong tenant finances and overall high occupancy, but extra supply, well, it's been weighing a bit on pricing of 3.06 million homes listed in the summer, just 28% sold. 28%, that left nearly 2 million unsold properties. And many sellers, yeah, they're cutting prices, they're delisting, but a lot of them are converting to rentals, about 2.3% of listings. That's pretty significant, 2.3% of listings flipped into rentals, topping 5% in some of these Sunbelt cities. And institutional landlords, they're the most exposed in these markets. Atlanta, Dallas, Phoenix, Houston, Tampa, Charlotte, all places where big corporate landlords, not only are they in heavy supply, but those are areas where they tend to be focused. Invitation Homes reported falling rents for new leases in oversupplied Texas and Florida cities like Tampa and Dallas. Both of those cities, both of them have sharply higher for sale and rental inventory compared with not last year, but with pre-pandemic levels. Now, landlords are trying to offset these weak new lease pricing by hiking in-place rents, up 6.2% in South Florida, even as new tenants pay slightly less. And what that'll do is, well, that'll keep income steady for now, but these widening rental gaps could eventually drive higher turnover. I'm somebody that rents. Before we sign a lease, before anybody signs a lease, the first thing you tend to do is see what else is out there. Now, single-family landlord stocks are lagging a bit compared to the overall market. Apartment REITs and home builders are also outperforming these single-family landlord stocks, and that in turn reflects a bit of investor caution. So, as the Fed has started to ease a bit, the question is, will lower mortgage rates ease for sale supply pressures? Will people now be able to afford homes such that sellers are comfortable moving out of theirs? Or will that also tempt more investment from the retail side into more rentals, creating a bit of a catch-22 for landlords? We are going to go to yet another voicemail.
I was calling about Unum Group, ticker symbol UNM. I own a small amount. Wanted to know if it's worth buying more or just selling. Just seeing what you guys think. Thanks.
Unum Group, ticker UNM, is a multi-line insurance company headquartered all the way out in Chattanooga, Tennessee. Relatively big, $13.4 billion market cap company. And what they do is they provide financial protection benefits and insurance products. So Unum US, about group disability, group life, AD&D, which is accidental death and dismemberment. Unum International operates in the UK, Poland. They offer similar types of insurance policies from a group perspective and from an individual perspective as well. Now, their premium growth has been pretty solid, 5% growth in premiums, and they maintain a pretty robust capital position. They're holding about $2 billion with a B. They were holding about $2 billion in cash. Reinsurance transactions also looking pretty solid here. They closed a large agreement with another company, and that has helped their long-term care and individual disability liabilities. Their dividend has been increased as well, about 10%, and the company has resumed its share repurchase program at the same time, as well as some pretty strong underwriting trends in the core business. Over the past 52 weeks, up 32%, up 7.63% year to date. And it's only sitting at 8.5 times forward-looking earnings. Price to book value, 1.2. Return on equity, pretty solid at 13.6, well above its five-year average. You know, we do hold this name for our clients, so certainly we think it's a good one to hold on to, and we will continue to do so. That is Unum Group, ticker UNM. We're going to go to a YouTube question. This one came in earlier. Actually, it came in just today. So this is a pretty fresh one. And it says, hi, I was hoping to get your input on ticker AMAT. Looks like it's picked up the last few months. Would it be a good time to hold, sell, or buy? Well, AMAT, AMAT is Applied Materials. It is an industrial manufacturing company, and they help to service the semiconductor and display-related industry. Semiconductor systems, about 74% of its revenue. Applied Global Services, about 23%. Geographically, only about 14% of its revenue comes from the United States, 37% from China, 17% from South Korea. And it's really been riding this wave here, up 37.48% year-to-date, up 17.67% over the past 3 months. Sales growth, phenomenal, 13.2% on an annualized basis. It has dipped though, right? The growth has dipped, not the number itself, but it grew from 14 to 27 billion from 2019 to 2024. Only about a billion in growth this upcoming year, so it's slowed to about 5%. Same time, margins, pretty solid. In the 20s, EBITDA margins are in the 30s, gross margins are in the high 40s, and it's sitting at a decent relative valuation, 22.8 times forward-looking earnings. Now, it is one of the leading global providers of equipment to this industry. And you know, because of this, and because of where its revenue is focused, there is still a little bit of risk out there, given that 37% of its revenue does come from China. There's IP risk in China, right? state-backed Chinese semiconductor firms are alleging trade secret misappropriation tied to some of the things that they did. You're having a bit of domestic supply chain and U.S. investment push on the positive side. They're working with Apple and TI to supply U.S.-made equipment to strengthen semiconductor manufacturing. It has been made clear for some time that it is a priority of the United States government to shore up internal manufacturing of semiconductors, and AMAT certainly has a place there. Question is, how effectively can they capitalize on this national geopolitical push? Can it defend its lead versus rivals, right? ASML versus KLA. And can it respond to emerging Chinese equipment firms? What about margins? Especially if growth is slowing. We are seeing revenue growth slow, not crazily, but slow a bit for them. Net income certainly isn't slowing from $7.1 billion to $7.5 billion, but margins, they're compressing a little bit, just a little bit. But return on equity is crazy high still, 38.4 times. So, you know, we own this for our clients. We like thematically where this fits in with what has been growing. So certainly we will hold on to AMAT. I think it's a good name. That's Applied Materials, ticker AMAT. Now, I don't know if you heard or if you missed it, but we did do an InvestTalk Wealth webinar yesterday. And that Wealth webinar was on the AI growth theme, and it strayed away from those top names, those names that everybody has been talking about, and more focused on other ways to play it while still hedging against this massive boom in CapEx and valuations. We talked about the picks and shovels, the energy names, the industrial names. We talked about the types of businesses that will stand to benefit. We talked about the theme broadly and how you can identify those different opportunities while being cognizant of the risks that you put within your portfolios. Now, obviously, that was in the past, but luckily for you, we do record our webinars. We are currently in the process of clipping it up, getting it ready, and we will put it over on our YouTube channel, Invest Talk with Two T's, where you can view it anytime you like. This is Invest Talk. I'm Luke Guerrero. We have one goal here to help you achieve your financial freedom. Our work continues after this break, so get your questions in now at 888-99-CHART.
The unbiased answers are free. So what are you waiting for? Call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Hey, Justin and Luke. This is Keenan calling in from Minnesota. I've learned a lot of lessons and insight from your guys' podcast. Really appreciate the work you do. Came across the leveraged ETFs for the S&P 500, specifically symbol SSO. I was just wondering, what do you guys think about the leveraged ETFs? But appreciate all your insight. Thank you. Have a good one.
I feel like we have questions on leveraged ETFs all the time, so let's tackle this one. SSO, the ProShares Ultra S&P 500 Leveraged Equity Fund. Now, SSO is a leveraged ETF that aims to deliver about 2 times the daily performance of the S&P 500 index before fees. It does that by using derivatives like swaps and futures in order to maintain this leverage. But it's important to understand. Now, listen up. Leverage resets daily. That means over long holding periods, compounding volatility effects can lead to returns that deviate from 2 times the S&P 500 in some pretty serious ways. It is a tactical or short-term tool. It is not a long-term buy and hold vehicle. It's also expensive. 87 to 89 basis points is the expense ratio. Now, because they reset daily, you can't, again, trust that it will give you over the long term 2 times. You can get dramatic underperformance here. Losses are magnified, just like gains are. A 1% drop may lead to, again, a 2% loss, not even including fees. There are also derivatives, funding costs, management fees, rebalancing. All of this is an implicit cost that isn't considered in this explicit 89 basis point expense ratio, and that could further lead to a deviation in returns. So because of this, I agree with many other people when they caution you to hold them for the long term. These are directional, large magnitude, short-term trading vehicles only. Before we head off, I want to talk about how the crypto treasury boom that saw about 200 plus companies stockpile Bitcoin. It's already cooling. Corporate crypto purchases fell to their lowest pace since April, with September volumes down pretty sharply, a quarter of public crypto treasury firms now trade below the value of their token holdings. Some stocks are off about 50% since announcing pivots, while small cap benchmarks like the Russell 2000, about 12% last quarter. Now, the rush followed the Trump administration's public embrace of digital assets, and it sparked a bunch of copycats across a bunch of industries, from biotech all the way to farming. Oversupply, therefore, well, it's a major drag. Too many firms issued stock to finance crypto buys at the same time. Even Strategy, which used to be called MicroStrategy, Michael Saylor's company, the model for this pivot, saw shares fall 20% in Q3. It's now valued at just 1.5 times its Bitcoin holdings. And when you fall below your net Bitcoin value, well, that hampers firms' abilities to issue new equity to fund further tokens. Strive's deal to acquire Semler Scientific shows that M&A is more likely to do what M&A does. It consolidates weaker players into larger premium valued entities. And so in times like these, right, bigger piles of Bitcoin and credible management at any individual firm is now a pretty large key to sustaining these investor premiums. But risks remain. If token prices tank, companies may become forced sellers. That deepens a downturn, not just with the company's stock price, but with the tokens themselves. Look at what happened with Solana when FTX crashed. Now, this has also led to hoarding, right? Ether, Solana, other stickable tokens are being hoarded at record levels. And so, given the dynamics that this creates from liquidity, from pricing, it's natural to ask whether this type of strategy, shifting your company to a Bitcoin treasury company, a crypto treasury company, is really a strategy that is sustainable in the long term. I'm Luke Guerrero. This completes another InvestTalk program. Justin and I thank you for listening, and we encourage you to tell your friends and family members about our free podcast downloads. You can get them at iTunes and Spotify, and while you're over there, please be sure to leave us a rate and review. As always, if today's show made you think about your financial picture, your investments, your taxes, your retirement, and whether it's really all working together for your benefit, I'd love to talk to you. At KPP, we offer no-cost portfolio reviews to help bring clarity and confidence to your financial lives. It is confidential, it is free, it is no cost, it is no obligation. Just go over to investtalk.com and click on the portfolio review button. Independent thinking, shared success. This is InvestTalk. Good night.
InvestTalk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm, which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Thank you for listening, and your comments and questions are welcome on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.